Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott gets some of the best guests out there, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SV Pod as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, The Undefeated on ESPN Plus offers fans year-round premium content highlighting the intersectionality of race, culture, and sports. Check out new premium storytelling, your favorite ESPN films, and more exclusively on ESPN Plus. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from a sunny California. Joel from Missouri City. Yo, Joel Anderson from Slate. What's going on, man?
What's up, bro? How you doing, man?
Hey, man, it's snowing over here, but like, every time I look and I'm like, yo, it's snowing. What that got to do with anything about my life?
Yeah, it could be so much worse, right? You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I ain't going nowhere.
Right.
Right? Like, the snow does not create any actual inconvenience to my life at this point. Like, the snow just provides a backdrop more than it does anything else.
I'm sure it must be a little cozy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't miss the snow. But to the extent that I used to have to endure that when I lived on the East Coast, you know, it can be kind of fun, kind of cozy, you know what I'm saying? Just cuddle up, you know what I'm saying? Watch a little something and eat something warm.
Yeah, cuddle up with the pillows, I guess, right?
I know how you you can say whatever you want, bro. I hear you.
Come on now, don't do that. Don't do that. But you know, you and I are both from Houston. Is anything going good in Houston right now?
I mean, I guess you could say they save some money next year by let go of J.J. Watt. That's one thing, right? They ain't got to pay $17 million next year, right? Is that it?
Dog. Nothing. Football team, your best player, don't want to play for y'all. And in fact, given the other stuff we're going to talk about in a second, he may never, ever come back.
This is a good time to go to Cancun, don't you think?
Oh, man. Yo, this is my thing about Ted Cruz going to Cancun. This is a political observation. I ain't getting into no politics with y'all, but the bottom line is one of the senators from Texas, when everything's going to hell down there, jumped on a plane and went to Cancun, and it appears is bringing his ass back after he caught to hell because somebody got a picture of him on the plane going to Cancun. And I'm just trying to figure out how it is that Ted Cruz thought in 2021 that he was going to be able to get on that plane and nobody noticed.
What terrible judgment to think that, like, you could do that, get away. And this time, everybody has a cell phone. Everybody has a camera phone. And you just thought you were going to be able to slide. At least take a private plane. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know you'll be out there on a United flight for real.
He ain't got private plane money.
Oh, he know people that got private plane money, though.
Yeah, but I got news for you. He wouldn't have got away with that neither. Private planes, like, those things get registered, right? Like, they got somebody would have done a 2 and 2 and did the math and figured it out. I'm actually surprised they can get any planes out of there, to be honest.
Well, where are people flying out of?
I would assume that if he's flying United and he's going to Cancun, he's flying out of Intercontinental.
Well, see, that's another Houston. Old Houstonians call it Intercontinental. It's called something else now.
Yes. They put George Bush's name on it, right?
But it's still George Bush Intercontinental Airport. But yeah, we call it.
And the abbreviation is IAH. It is Intercontinental. Like, I'm too old to be out here changing how I get down in this.
I'm sure it's like people in D.C. for whom DCA is always going to be D.C. and not Reagan. You know?
It's national.
Yeah, it's national. Right. Yeah. Maybe there are some people that call it Reagan. I don't know any.
The thing on that in Atlanta is streets. Mm. Like, they tried to basically change the image of a whole lot of stuff by changing the street name, right? Mm-hmm. So the most legendary one of these, there's a bunch, like some of them, like in the city, they changed a lot of them for like civil rights leaders. So what used to be Ashby, and I assume Ashby was some sort of Confederate, they named that one after like Joseph Lowry, for example. Like, they went through and changed a lot of those street names. But the big one in Atlanta, and I think the first one they tried this with, well, also this isn't the first one, but they tried to change the name of Bankhead Highway after some dude, and it's been named after that dude at least since 1997. And I ain't heard nobody refer to it as anything other than Bankhead. They tried that with the Lakewood Freeway. I forget who they named that after. That's still the Lakewood Freeway, but the big one was Stewart Avenue. And if you don't know Atlanta, the folks who know Atlanta knew that I was going to talk about Stewart Avenue. Mm-hmm. Stewart Avenue is now Metropolitan Parkway. It's where the legendary Run and Shoot used to be. It is where the legendary Club Nikki used to be. And it is famous in the city for being a stroll.
Okay, you said Run and Shoot. I was like, wait a minute, what's the Run and Shoot?
Run and Shoot was a gym that had like all the full-length basketball courts and weight room and everything else. And like as a student, I think you could get a membership for like $10.
Ooh, what a great name and a great deal. Wow.
Dog, you used to go work out, get some run in, and that's where the hoopers, like NBA players, like that was the spot in Atlanta to come get run. It was 24 hours. Like you could get run at Run and Shoot at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow. So you might just show up Mookie Blaylock just being there, you know, looking for.
No, dude, no. You're talking about you might show up and Mookie Blaylock might be there. No, I'm talking about you might show up and Allen Iverson be there. it was like, you know, the Rucker or West 4th Street or whatever in New York.
Okay.
Yeah, Run and Shoot was a spot to go hoop, right? Mm-hmm. Thing about it was, they broke into cars so much at Run and Shoot that if your car got broken into and you called the police, they ain't even come out. They just gave you a number.
Can I tell you a story about my last night in Atlanta then?
Please do.
Yeah. So what's that place? It's called R. Thomas. It's in Buckhead. I think that's one of them peach trees. Is it called R. Thomas Grill or something like that?
Thomas Grill. I'm not up on that.
Okay. Anyway, it's not too far from Cafe Intermezzo.
Okay.
So anyway, last night, having a late night dinner with some friends, Mayor Kasim Reed comes in. And, you know, he had, you know, I guess his niece, somebody that was with him, you know, about 1 o'clock at night, you know, maybe his niece. I don't know. He's trying to get time on the night. And I'll never forget, I come out and my car got busted into, dog. Like somebody just bust into my car. You know what I'm saying? There's all this, you know, glass everywhere. I'm like, oh, I mean, I've been in Atlanta 2 years, man. Why I had to wait till the last night? And we out there long enough with the cops. Kasim Reed comes by and it's just like, that's too bad, young man. I was like,
that's all the mayor got.
I mean, you're the mayor. I mean, come on, man. Come on, bitch. You put some people on this. There's cameras all around here. Why aren't you helping me out, bro? At least don't say that to me. Don't say nothing to me then if you're going to be like that. You know what I'm saying?
If you're the mayor, you should be like, have you called the police? Are they on their way? You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to make sure that everybody on their grind. He's like, look, I'm off the clock till Monday.
He has some places to be, in all fairness, it seems.
Dog, you the mayor, man. Better than me. I'd have been like, nah, dog. Come make sure I get this straight.
I mean, man, I didn't want to be a hater. I wanted him to have a good time. It's a very difficult job, as you know. It's a thankless job, as Keisha Bottoms is finding out right now.
I don't understand why anybody won't be the mayor of anything. Like, that's all ego.
Terrible job.
I don't know why nobody want to be the president.
Oh, I mean, I can understand president in terms of legacy and, you know, influence, power, all that other stuff. But a mayor is the most thankless job there is, bro. I mean, you are right in the middle of it. I mean, you really should only do that job if you have a really unique interest in like fixing potholes and zoning. You know what I mean?
You got to love that city.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Andrew Yang, you're a rich man, bro. Why do you want to be the mayor of New York? Why don't you just go out and be rich?
Just ego, man. People want to be in charge of something.
Yeah. I mean, people run for class president in school. There should be enough stuff going on in school that you don't need to do that. But hey, people want to do it. You're right. Ego.
Let me tell you something, man. I am more skeptical of people who were SGA president in college than I am of just about anybody in the world.
Oh, man. I can think of two people that you are maligning right now.
You can?
Well, David Banner was one of them, and Andrew Gillum.
Yeah, well, okay. Like,
I wish I could see Bomani's face right now, by the way.
No. Don't tell them that. They're going to misunderstand what I mean by this. Okay. Like, the thing about the guy, first of all, one thing that's fascinating about SGA presidents is they often don't graduate.
Ooh.
Because that job is so hard.
It's very
like, demanding. You're a member of the Board of Trustees. That job involves doing so much. The SGA president is typically walking around campus looking half dead. Just so tired from doing all that work. But I'm looking at you like, again, why do you even want to do this?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what are your reasons? And the jokes be, they tell you anything too, boy. That's another thing about the person that runs for SGA president. That's somebody that has already practiced at lying to you.
Nobody knows what they are actually responsible for, so they can make all sorts of promises. And ain't nobody going to really follow up. How does anybody know if you were any good at your job?
Yeah, but that's just like, oh, that's what you about? And here's why I feel that way. And maybe it's just personal, right? Mm-hmm. My freshman year of college, we had a hall council for the dorm. Nobody was running for treasurer. And so I was like, all right, I'll run for treasurer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because one of my partners was the secretary because nobody ran for secretary because dudes, right? So one of my partners was doing it. I was like, all right. And I won. And look, I won because my name was first on the ballot. Like one other dude ran. Yeah, like, I gave no speech or no presentation or nothing like that. I won because my name came first on the ballot. Simple as that.
You didn't have no platform.
No, none. None. Dog, nobody wanted to do it. So I was just like, all right. And I got on that and I made a decision right then and there. I don't want to be on no board, no committee, no nothing ever again in my life. In my life. Like, it was just all various backfighting, trying to stop people from stealing. I was just like, nah, I'm never doing this again. And I can't imagine, like, for me, you get in those rooms and get in those situations with all their people with their own self-interest that is being masked by the fact that they say they want to do stuff for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And you want to do it again? Nah, I'm out on you. Like you probably like playing Monopoly. I'm out on you.
Well, you know, I think we're both alike in this way in that we're both not big into groups.
Yeah, I don't trust them.
You know what I'm saying? And also, I believe that the fewer people that you have in your life, the less complicated it gets. Like, I have a lot of friends and I have a lot of people that, you know, I keep in contact with. But in terms of people that have access to me and the people that I deal with on a regular basis, that number has been sort of whittled down because you don't know what people's intentions are. And I'm not trying to be cynical about the nature of other people, but it's just like, you know, sometimes it's just easier to keep your circle a little bit smaller than it could be.
Yes.
Like this. I'm not really a guys trip guy. For instance, that's not me. I don't want to have to share bathrooms with nobody. I don't want to have no debates about where we gonna go tonight. What do y'all want to do? I don't want to do what y'all want to do. I want to do what I want to do. You know what I mean? So that's just a part of that. You know, team sports were very difficult for me. I was a bad basketball player because I didn't like to pass. You know what I'm saying? You know, I forgot that was a really important part of being the point guard on the team. I didn't pass. You know, people complaining about me. I had that tunnel vision. You know what I'm saying?
Track was what you needed to play.
Track, individual sport, I'm totally responsible. Thing that I got most frustrated at in track was, you know, relay races. You know what I'm saying? I was like, man, y'all handed me the stick in this position? For real?
Yeah, but I just can't imagine getting into a political situation and enjoying that, right? Like, all the things that go into that, that is what you wake up for in the morning. Like, nah, dog, I don't see it.
ESPN Radio and the Undefeated, celebrating Black history always.
Lift every voice.
In the 1966 National Championship game, Texas Western coach Don Haskins made history by fielding an all-black starting lineup versus an all-white Kentucky team. The Miners lineup led Texas Western to a national title, beating the Adolph Rupp coach team 72-65. That game inspired Southern college teams to recruit more black players.
Black history always, the Undefeated, and ESPN Radio.
Let's get back to like the totality of Houston, right?
Yeah, right.
So you and I, you graduated from high school a year earlier than I did. So I moved to Houston in 1987, right before I turned 7 years old. Mm-hmm. So you've been there your whole life.
Yep.
Okay. I can't think of any time that the temperature got below like 28, let alone getting to like 11.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, man. I can't either. I was telling somebody the other day that I remember it snowing when I was maybe 11 years old, but it never really got below like 30. It wasn't like the kind of cold that I dealt with in New York or wherever else. So yeah, no, I mean, you've talked about this. People don't have winter coats in Houston.
No!
You know what I'm saying? Like, we were getting by with windbreakers.
Dog, we were getting by. Look, if you wanted a winter coat in Texas, I suggest you make varsity. Like, you better make the varsity or go to the district meet or whatever it takes to letter in whatever your activity happens to be. Because that is the heaviest coat that a person from Texas is likely to, especially in Houston. Why would we need these coats? When would this ever come up?
oh, my mother is always complaining about it being like when it gets below 60. Like, it's like, oh, it's cold out there. It's cold out there. I was like, it makes sense in Houston. It is. And you don't have the clothes for it either. Like, I don't even think hoodies were a real big thing in Houston, if I'm not mistaken.
No, are just like sweaters.
Yeah.
Like, why would you own these things? Because it just never came up. Like, when people are like, I don't understand why people were not better prepared. Because this is not something that you need to prepare for. Most of them are prepared for an alien attack either. They're not prepared for an earthquake. Like, if you don't live in California, what is happening in Texas right now, just the weather part, because there's clearly been like institutional failures, but just the weather part, it is like if an earthquake hit where you live.
Yeah, right.
By the way, not just any earthquake. Like, I'm talking about like 5.3.
Yeah,
you like know, a
meaningful one. One with like, oh, whoa, some buildings got, you know, some foundations got disturbed and some cars got turned over.
Yes.
No, that's probably right. I mean, it reminds me so much, Bomani, of Hurricane Harvey, like seeing what people are going through. It is one of the worst disasters that I've ever seen inflicted upon a city. And that is saying something for a place that every year goes through some sort of, you know, natural catastrophe, bro. You know, the floods, everything else, like. You get used to that living down there, but seeing what I'm seeing now,
right?
That's unheard of. It makes sense that people weren't prepared for it, which is not absolving the state government for their role in abandoning people, but it just makes sense that nobody would have expected. I was talking to my folks and people down there in the days before, and I'm like, oh, it's going to be cold for a little bit. It'll be fine. You know, we'll be okay. Nobody had any idea it was going to be like that.
And you know what? Hearing you say the word hurricane made me think of what might be a good parallel for what this is. It's kind of like when Hurricane Sandy hit New York City.
Ooh,
I didn't know hurricanes came to New York.
Yeah, I was like, nah, wait, don't it stop at like South Carolina?
Yeah, I thought North Carolina was like the end of the hurricane zone. I ain't never, ever heard or thought of or considered a hurricane hitting New York City. And I wish somebody would come out here and be like, ah, how are y'all not ready for a hurricane? Because that don't happen where we live. And in Houston, the houses are not insulated in a way. Like, the insulation in your house in Houston is to protect you from the heat.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, like there's buildings in Miami, for example, that don't have heat because it never comes up.
Right.
It's not an issue. And so, like, for everyday people, they don't have the coats. If my heat went out, like if I still had power, right? Mm-hmm. But if my heat went out in my apartment here in New York, and I've had a situation where my heat was out for like a day, I got the equipment to get through that. I got the jackets. I got the long johns. I got the socks. It's not what I would want it to be.
Right.
I could survive it. I would not be miserable. People are dying, man.
Oh, man.
And hospitals don't have water.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... You mentioned the heat. Like, in New York, you don't control your own heat, for instance, right? The building controls your heat. You don't get to have a thermometer on your wall or nothing like
that. Well, I have a thermometer on the wall, but I am still at the mercy of the boilers.
Right. I did not know that that was a thing that happened in New York. So I was just totally... I remember one time I came back to my apartment, and it was cold, and I was like, what's going on? I'm trying to turn on, you know, I'm trying to turn on the heat. And I was like, oh, that doesn't work. That actually doesn't. And I went back down to the lobby and I found out that for the past 3 days that the heat had been off in our building. And I did not know because I had just gotten into town. And I was like, oh, I had no idea that this was something that like I had no control over. In much the same way in Texas, it's just like, oh, okay, well, I pay my electricity bill. I pay my power bill. I've done everything I need to do. Like, I pay my water bill. I didn't understand that these things were going to be affected by this sort of stuff. And I'm at the mercy of other people. Like, these are not things I can do individually to take care of this stuff. Like, I depend on other people to fix these larger problems. But, like, I mean, how could you possibly blame Texans for not being ready for this? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, man.
Well, also, and people out here just doing what they think makes sense. And if your heat's not working and your gas is still working, people are opening the oven.
Yeah.
Which, again, I don't think is on its face terribly unreasonable under the circumstances, but they getting in the hospital from carbon monoxide poisoning. And this is before we even get to the idea or the thought that if you do not have heat, it makes it very difficult for you to social distance. So we got a whole lot of these vectors coming together in these houses because that's the person that's got power.
Absolutely.
So like you can't freeze in your house You're just going to have to roll the dice on this other stuff.
Right. Well, even the warming shelters or the churches or whatever that people are opening up. Like our boy Mattress Mac, you know, opening up, you know, the gallery furnitures or whatever as a warming station. And yeah, I mean, like that is the most pressing, most urgent need at the moment. But it also puts people in a position to where they may be getting exposed. You know, I know that people are getting vaccines right now, but it doesn't mean that the coronavirus is over. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's just like a cataclysm of like all these, you know, bad disasters, man. It's just... I don't know, man. I just look down there and I don't know about you because, you know, we talk about being from Houston. I'm a Houston person, dyed in the wool. I love my hometown. I love my family. I love visiting my people. And the only reason I would ever move back to Houston is because of family. It's not because I would want to live there.
And no state tax.
No. Well, but see, but look, Bomani, that's one of the reasons they had a problem they in right now.
It is. You're right. But I would just be honest with you right now. Okay. I left Houston in 1997, and the only thing I knew was that I was never coming back. Like, not that I was never coming back, like, ever, right? Like, I'm not running away, right? But I knew. Like, my parents had left and everything else. Like, I knew that living in Houston was not something that I wanted to do. I knew that it was not something that I was going to do. However, after I started making all this money, Houston had a completely different appeal. Because let me tell you something, Jack. I used to live in a no income tax state. I live in a city income tax state now, which is to say, in New York, you pay the state tax and a city tax.
Yeah.
Texas looking completely different to me at this point.
Well, they provide services for you in New York. In Texas, it's just like, well, hey, man, if you don't have a car, I don't know how you're going to get there, bro.
That crazy mayor in Colorado City
who
put that thing up on Facebook. First of all, what y'all don't be realizing is anybody can be the mayor of one of them towns. You just got to be willing to do
it. That town's 4,000 people out like near San Angelo. Like, yeah, that could be anybody, bro.
Yeah, well, like the little town I went to high school in, Waller, right? Mm-hmm. I forget what the mayor's name is, but I looked the town up on the wiki not too long ago, and whoever was the mayor when I was a kid is the mayor now.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel as though it is unlikely there's been any push or prodding to try to get a new mayor, because don't nobody want to be the mayor? Like, them jobs don't pay no money.
Right.
Like, they are largely ceremonial positions. Anybody might be the mayor, right? It just so happens that the title is the mayor. And so everybody flipped out when they saw this. I'm like, dog, y'all don't get it. In every county in America, damn near, there is one mayor who might say something like that. In every county in America.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, so having covered city government in Shreveport, for instance, the mayor there, both of them were very good politicians or whatever. But you start getting down to them city council positions or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Or you get into school board, you know, people that run for the school board or run for other various zoning boards, bro, it's a grab bag, man. You know, there's no guarantee that person, even those like state legislature jobs or the state senator jobs, there ain't a lot of competition for some of them positions, bro. So you don't know who you might end up with in some of those political positions.
Let me tell you what I think might be analogous to this. You let me know if I'm off, right? Mm. So have you ever been to like for real boxing matches in New York City?
Oh, not in New York City, nuh-uh.
All right. So I went to a couple different matches. I went to a Triple G fight, Madison Square Garden, and I went to another fight because my man Corey Erdman from the Morning Jones folks, he was calling the fight for the Zone. He got me in, and I think it was at like the Paramount Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually, I went to see that fight with Roy, right? So me and Roy are posted up, and we're watching this fight. And every time somebody says boxing is dead, I always dismiss them because a big fight is still a big fight. Mm-hmm. And I look up in the Paramount Theater and like, it's pretty deep up in that spot. And what I realized they were doing was the undercard was just local after local after local after local, right? And so they were filling up them seats in the back because some dude from Washington Heights, a Dominican cat from Washington Heights is coming to fight. And a bunch of Dominicans from Washington Heights are turning up. Some Albanian dude from New York is there. It's a bunch of Albanians in there. Basically, if you can bring some people with you,
yes,
you can get on the card.
Absolutely.
And all these little joints, basically, if you can remind all your friends just to go vote, you will win.
Yeah. A little bit of a get out the vote effort, especially like those towns where there's an incumbent and, you know, maybe 600 people vote. All it takes is you just being a little less rigorous in your campaigning and you could be out of a job.
Well, hold on. Let me ask you this. You said that town, Colorado City, had and it is Colorado. I looked it up.
I was going to say.
Classically Texas, by the way. Colorado. Colorado City, you say, got 4,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't no 600 people coming to vote.
Oh, God, no. 300? 400?
Maybe. I imagine more people show up to vote against people than for them. Like, they got some beef
right.
from back when they was in high school in 1979.
Right. I mean, look. You talked about Waller, right? In Missouri City, the guy that was the mayor when I was growing up was the guy that was the mayor up until, like, you know, maybe 3 years ago. And they had finally elected a black female mayor. The first black female mayor in Missouri City, by the way. And then I think she lost. I want to say that she lost recently. But it's like that kind of stuff happens all the time in these smaller towns where it's just like, yo, man, you know, 12-year-old people can't get off of work on Tuesday. And they can't come to vote, you might lose. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It was like, hey, man, I tried to get off of work, couldn't get to the polling station and close. My bad, bro. You know?
That dude, if you hadn't seen it, he got out and he said, basically, it's every man for himself. Only strong survive, right? You ain't got no electricity. You ain't got no heat. You ain't got no power. Bunker down, baby. Make it work, right?
Right.
Like, and he's just like, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, he's the mayor, so in all fairness, he ain't in charge of none of that. But that is also a lot of the Texas governance ethos right there. You kind of own your own, bro. You know what I'm saying? You should have your own bomb shelter. You know what I'm saying? You should have stocked up at Costco. You know what I'm saying? Have your bottle of water. You know what I'm saying? And have a grill down there and be able to take care of yourself.
Texas is not about people looking out for each other.
No.
In the origins of this or everything else, Texas is about one thing, getting money.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole reason anybody showed up. Think about it. The first rush is they gonna let you have slaves.
Yeah, right, yeah.
The people who get there before the revolution, one of the big draws is we don't know what the slavery thing is, how is it gonna play out here in the United States, and they letting states in that they're not allowing to be slave states and all this stuff. But we heard that these Mexicans got this spot down here where they say that you can bring your down here and get this money and it's all good. And then when the Mexicans were like, nah, slavery, we're not really feeling that.
Right.
It wasn't too long after that before the white folks was like, yo, where get the gas, right?
I guess y'all don't have to leave then because that's what we doing here now. Right.
Texas once tried to take Santa Fe. Like, that was like the last stand of the Republic of Texas, is they marched all the way over there. Because think about it. For those of you who are familiar with this, that sign when you come into Texas from the east that say El Paso, 857 miles away. Santa Fe, past that, homie.
Oh, yeah.
All right? Past that. And they went there and got whopped. But the game has always been about money. And this is an untested theory. I'm not an anthropologist. I don't even know if anthropologists do this, but I think you'll feel where I'm coming from. Texas culture is range culture. Like, Texas culture is a culture that originates from people having big old plot of land very, very far removed from one's neighbor.
Yes.
Right? Like, you go out there and the ethos is, you got to do it yourself.
Right.
Like, if you think about it in the point of origin, there is no, I'm going to go borrow a cup of sugar from Mr. John. Mr. John live all the way down there. Like, the guns is about having all this land and all these cows. And if somebody come to steal your cows,
I got to protect myself from rustlers.
But for real, if somebody is stealing your cow, what can you do other than shoot them?
Right.
I don't think people understand this, man. A lot of money in them cows. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. That's big money right there. But wouldn't a person that was steal a cow, you'd think they carry a gun too, right?
They might.
Right.
At some point, somebody had, when I was in college, I had this MP3 player. I don't know if you heard about it. It was called the Nomad Jukebox. But it was like a proto iPod. It was, but this is like the year 2000.
It's like a Zoom?
That, it's much bigger.
Okay.
Like, it's the year 2000 version.
Okay.
But you can run your MP3s straight on there, and it had the file names, and it could sort by artists and everything else. So it wasn't like the first MP3 player, but it was way early. And when I had it, nobody had MP3 players, right?
Okay.
Guns were like that at some point, right?
Right?
Like, the pistol was like that at some point,
right,
where I was like, somebody, imagine being the first cattle rustler to be up in there making it happen and then hear a bucka, bucka, bucka. Damn, I hadn't even thought about that, right? But the gun culture and all the laws about when you could use your guns to protect as a property, if you think about it starting there, everything ultimately makes sense. So this is a state that is built on a fundamental ethos of every man for himself. And then you add the racial dynamics and it gets extra every man for himself, but not with the electricity.
I mean, man, it just, the thing is, man, is that Texas is, I guess its inattention to governance is coming back to harm it now. Y'all get that individual ethos. But the thing is, like, it's kind of, again, it's, I go back to the hurricane, man. It's just like, at some point we're all paying it. Like, if we're not going to all pay in and be responsible for each other, especially as like these events become more frequent, then there really isn't a point in like living there. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can have land, but what is it going to be worth? Like, just think about all the houses that are going to be damaged. Like, what are the insurance premiums going to be like going forward from here? The cost to rebuild. That's where you need a robust government to come in and help people, but that's just not.
It's not what we do.
But the thing is too, and I because people, you know, get on this thing about Texas being a red state and all that stuff. And I think it's important to mention, and my friend Adam Serwer talks about this a lot too. Texas isn't a red state. It's a non-voting state, right? Like, every major city in Texas is blue.
Yeah.
The suburbs are, you know, largely purple. But the thing is, like, Texas has all these ways that make it difficult to vote. They purge voters, they close, you know, polling places, they make it difficult to register, and they punish the hell out of people that break election law. They don't want people voting. And this is the way. So like, it's like when people say, well, this is the government y'all voted for, this is what Texans want. Well, some people want that, but a lot of people don't. And a lot of people don't even get a chance to weigh in because of the way the system is set up.
Well, that's the whole South, right? Because I think something that people don't, who are not from the South, don't understand about the South is just how many Black people are there. And in Texas, it's a much more relevant discussion of how many brown people are there.
Yep.
Right. Because Texas, I think, is something like 12% Black. And it's, and that's not because there aren't a lot of Black people. It's because there are a lot of Mexicans.
Right.
Right. Like, it thins out. It changes the way that you look at the percentages. Right. But it's a lot of Black people. But those states are red because they've done so much to stop Black people from voting.
Right.
Like, Mississippi, 36% Black and red at the same time. The math don't math on that unless every single white person is voting against the Black people,
right?
Basically, right? Like, not every single, obviously. That's kind of what the game is. And so I ask you this, I don't know if I asked you this explicitly, but for people who don't know this, this is going to blow your mind, okay? There are three power grids that power America.
Yeah.
There is one power grid that powers every state east of the Mississippi.
And that's called the Eastern Grid, right?
The Eastern Grid.
Yeah, right.
There is west of the Mississippi, and it is called
the Western Grid.
Mm-hmm. Except that grid that powers west of the Mississippi, what I meant to say was everything west of the Mississippi, except for Texas.
Right.
Because Texas has its own power grid. In the most Texan thing that you could do, we got our own generator.
Right. We don't need y'all help. We good here, bro. We got it. We straight. We
right. I got a generator. Right. Everybody in Texas knows I got a generator guy, right? Texas is I got a generator state, except it is completely unregulated. Like, it is this experiment in running something like this and letting the market fully run it. And it is a full-on disaster. And these power people about to have sky high power bills for power they're not actually getting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, this, I mean, doesn't this all go back to what you were talking about earlier? I mean, Texas is a place where people go to hit for a lick, man. You know what I'm saying? That, I mean, like, and they figured, oh, we can make some money off this. Like that, which is just, I mean, on its face is terrifying. We can make money off of providing power to people. Let's figure out how we can squeeze the most money out of this situation as possible. Like, that doesn't, like, they call it a utility for a reason. We need that stuff. You know what I'm saying?
But it's tricky. Like, so as economists, like, mm-hmm. I think I made this example before, that health economists and public health and people who work in public health always have these conflicts, because the public health people are just always, how can we give all this stuff away for free? Mm-hmm. And the economists are like, okay, but we do have to come up with like some plan for allocation, mm-hmm. right? One thing that I feel like this has reminded us of, that is something that's very easy to forget, which mm-hmm. is electricity is a finite resource.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it in these ways, but I don't think people think about the fact that electricity has to be produced, right? Like why there was a need for the Hoover Dam, for example, because we needed to generate this electricity. Like you don't just put a plug in the ground and then all of a sudden we have electricity for everybody. It has to be produced. This is like one of the things about crypto that for me is an actual moral issue is the ridiculous right. levels of electricity that are required to do the mining, right? And Definitely. So what's happening here is Texas doesn't have enough electricity. They could have enough electricity, but they just been hitting for licks, and playing the electricity game in such a way to just try to maximize the profits that they get off of it at every turn. And now in the cold, I understand this is something that you did not think was going to happen at all in your risk calculus. But the issue is an issue that would be here even if it weren't for this particular moment. But we don't have enough electricity.
I know that, you know, industry has to do what it has to do. To me, that's the problem with like putting things that are that essential in the hands of private industry, because it's not profitable to fix infrastructure or to winterize all this other stuff, right? Like they can't make any money off of that. And so, of course, it goes undone. And now here we are. People are like in misery right now. And I think the thing is, I think a lot of people, they think that we're going to be able to like, people are going to learn a lesson from this. And I actually don't. Like, I just think this is going to continue to happen over and over again because of the way Texas is set up. Like, do you have any faith that Texas will like address this issue and that like 10 years from now? Yeah, right.
I don't have faith in it. And for some reason in this country, there is a difference in opinion on climate change.
Yeah.
All right. Like the lengths that we've gone to both sides, climate change, to the point where we call it climate change instead of global warming. Mm-hmm. And it was people on the right who came up with climate change, and people on the left ride along with it because honestly, they so damn addicted to political correctness that they heard it was a new name out here. And they were like, yeah, we shouldn't say the globe is warm. You know what I'm saying? And so they jumped on it too. But it seems very clear because I'm doing it too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things are happening with the weather that had never happened before.
Right.
And so I wonder if people in some of these other warm weather places are looking at this and realizing, yo, things that were previously not within the realm of possibility are now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do we need to do some sort of, even if it's just minor winterizing or something like that? Because like I say, it doesn't make sense in Miami to have a full-on winter weather plan. It doesn't. But it sounds like you got to have a little bit of one now.
You got to prepare. But I mean, man, like that's the thing. Three cities we really care about are right in the crosshairs of like climate disasters: Houston, New Orleans, and Miami. And like, yes. If we can't figure those out, those places aren't going to be habitable in like 75 years, 100 years, something like that. Like, we'll be dead, right? You know, theoretically. I mean, you know. But like, you know, we won't be here for that. But eventually, somebody's going to have to do something. And it doesn't appear like we're able to sort of marshal the sort of collective will. I mean, you know, I mean, we know what the political climate is in this country right now. It's just very hard to get any consensus on this. Just imagine trying to convince people that we really need to make accommodations, not just for poor people, but like rich people are going to suffer too if they live in these places.
Well, this is what I think is interesting about Texas is that all these rich people are moving now, you know, moving in now,
mm-hmm.
and we gonna find out if they got any sway.
Right.
Imagine this: you move into a new house, and you find out, well, actually, we're not on the power grid that everybody else is on. We're on our own power grid, and you've run out of electricity. That's not a question that you ask before you move the business. Hey, what's the power grid situation out here?
Right.
You know, like these aren't things that you ask going through doing the inspection or whatever it is. So like Elon Musk and all these other folk that don't move down there.
Yeah.
I imagine that Elon Musk will be on the phone with the governor pronto.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, will these new people coming in have any sway over this?
And they fled a place. You know, the thing is the rolling blackouts thing. That's like basically what got Enron messed up, right? Like the rolling blackouts in California. Right. So they're basically going through the same thing here. They left California to get away from like, you know, what they think is like intractable political problems, and the Democrats are not prepared to handle, you know, these issues. And then they go right to Texas where they're dealing with the same stuff. And yeah, maybe they will be able to have some influence because Texas courted these people so heavily. They said they wanted them there. They want them to take part in the political and social culture of the state. So you got to assume that they're going to be trying to call, you know, Elon Musk and see what he can cook up, you know, to winterize.
No, I hadn't thought about that. Elon, yeah. It's the governor.
Right.
Hey, Just wondering. I know you're talking about going to space. It gets cold in space, doesn't it? Right. So how you gonna keep everybody warm?
Right. You got some technology, right?
Here's what I was thinking.
Wait a minute. You know, has that bro built a rocket that hadn't blown up yet? I mean, that's the one thing about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how much I trust. Seriously, has he built a rocket that ain't blown up yet?
I wouldn't call him, right? I am not a believer in that guy at all. I would not call him, but they're going to have to figure something out. I just can't, like, every time I'm calling somebody, got power. Nah, but then I lost power an hour and a half later. Like, this is, and I saw somebody say that basically he was trying to decide whether or not a comparison to Hurricane Katrina was appropriate. And I do think that there are some fundamental parallels about, like, the role of government and the suffering that we're seeing people under, and the take care of yourself attitude that we've seen come from some people in elected office. But obviously the difference between this and Katrina is going to be the faces of this are more diverse than the faces of Katrina were. Like, Katrina just explicitly felt like they were turning their backs on Black people. We got Black people getting shot on bridges as they trying to get out of town and everything else, right? Like, it felt like all the racism coming due in a lot of ways. But it's a different situation over here. Like, over here, this is randomly hitting the whole state. There is no group of people, no swath, no demographic. There is no place that is overpopulating, it seems, and having their power off in the cold and stuff like that. No, this is getting everybody. And I wonder, like, if this keeps getting worse, you know, in the way that it's all being dealt with, how the national media is then going to cover it, because there's no way to cover it other than put it squarely in the context of capitalism run amok.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, like, I've been sort of heartened by the media coverage so far, which is a rare thing to say, and that they have, like, not only pushed back on, like, the lies that have coming out about who is responsible and what is responsible for this breakdown. Like, again, we talked about the dude at the beginning of the podcast. I mean, people are like, hey, you probably shouldn't leave and abandon your constituents in a time of crisis like this. Like, you probably should come on back, or you should be there, or be trying to do something to marshal resources. So I'm heartened, at least early on, that, you know, maybe the media coverage and the narrative around this will, you know, make people see who, you know, the things that need to change. But I mean, humans are really stubborn people, bro. I always say that humans are ungovernable. You know what I mean? Like, we don't do what we want to do anyway. And if there's still money to be made in the system, I just cannot imagine that, you know, Houston's going to be a place that's going to be a fun place to live in 20 years. I want to be there for my family, but I just, like, it's just terrifying, you know?
That own grid thing, how has that not been discussed more? Like, I felt like, that's right. Crazy.
Right, right. It would just be like if we had our own FAA or something, you know what I'm saying? Like, we fly planes different down here, you know what I'm saying? We have our own different standards or whatever. It's fine, we got it, until we don't, you know what I mean?
Like, this sounds like something Louisiana would do.
Right. Right, right. Well, I mean, buddy, I heard something that, like, in previous times, like, Mexico has had to help out the Texas grid. Like, when it's had problems, yes. Like, yes. Texas had to turn to Mexico, bro.
I bet Mexico was sitting back there like, huh, tell us more about how you don't have enough electricity for your people.
Right.
They must love that call. Like, can you imagine Vicente Fox?
Oh, my God. He's all this Rick Perry.
Loving it. You see, El Paso, though, is not on the Texas grid. Right. It's on the other grid. Right. I need to look into it. Like, at what point the folks at El Paso were like, hey, dog, I think we need to get on this mountain time zone grid. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think this is the way we need to go. And El Paso, apparently, they've been good.
Yeah, they've been doing fine. And they just like, you know what, guys? We good. We straight. We got our own. We'll take care of it over here. You know what I'm saying? Y'all do y'all thing. We straight right here. You know?
Yeah. They got the old grid. Like, I was reading a column in the Washington Post. Karen Ataya wrote a column where she is from Dallas, and somehow she had bought into the idea that if Texas were its own country, that everything would be okay, which I have to say is a giant strike against Dallas. The fact that this very intelligent woman actually convinced herself that you could survive, that tells me everything that y'all teaching up there in Dallas. In Houston, people don't really be entertaining that idea that we gonna start our own is a real kind of West Texas sort of phenomenon. And she was like, yeah, we can do it. We've got our own grid. And I was like, Yo, right then and there, I would have been like, what? We got all.
Yeah, right. Let's talk more about why we the only state that has decided to go in that direction first before we talk about how it's good, you know?
Yeah, like, I feel like having your own power grid is a half step away from, like, making your own clothes. Like, you can do it. There's advantages to, like, us all, like, having an economy around this. Oh, yeah,
I know the rest of y'all have plumbing, and you're hooked into the city's water system, but we got a well over here, so it's straight. Don't worry about that, bro.
That's exactly what it is. We can be pooling resources to make things happen. And these rich people with this electricity convince y'all, nah, we got our own.
Right. Well, let me. Texas exceptionalism to me is about football. It's about Tex-Mex. You know what I'm saying? It's about how attractive the people in the state are, as your boy Mad Max may have said.
And a willingness to shoot people. The real Texas exceptionalism comes down to, or I'll shoot you.
Right. Look, man, I don't know about you because we both grew up in the 90s, but, you know, road rage was really not a thing because you don't know who's willing to pull out on you, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like starting fights and everything, you know?
Yo, you and I have talked about this.
Yeah.
We were both told growing up, do not honk your horn at somebody in traffic.
Not at all. Not at all. Man, well, look, and you know this, you're in New York now. I just remember, and I can't remember if we talked about this before. I remember in New York, people just getting into loud arguments on the street, like fights. You know what I'm saying? Talking to each other. I'll never forget I was in Brooklyn when I lived in Brooklyn, and this woman and this man were going back and forth. He was calling her names that I just didn't know that you could do that in public. You know, it was just like, what is going on? And I was like, oh, you know why that's so strange? Because in the South, and particularly in Texas, you don't hear a lot of people arguing like that because you just don't know who might pull out on you, bro.
Ain't a lot of jibber jabber.
Right.
It ain't much. Like the whole idea of rap beef to Texans.
Yeah.
it's counterintuitive.
Right.
If y'all really mean it.
Right. Yeah. How long are we gonna keep talking about this before something happens? I was like, nah, bro, I don't wanna, you gotta avoid fight. I mean, that's the sign of intelligence in Texas. And like, you know, as a guy, you have to swallow your pride sometimes, man. He's like, I don't want this problem. I don't wanna have a fight.
Yo. It is interesting as I talk to people from different places or just look at it in various ways. I am all about walking away. Like somebody's going to have to be the one to do it. Cool. Yeah. It's me. The likelihood that this other person is crazy is far higher than I know how crazy I am.
Right.
Chances are this other person is crazier than me.
But man, we were talking about this the other day, right? Like particularly about New Orleans. So if you offend somebody from New Orleans, just apologize. Apologize. Don't like escalate. Don't try to be, you know, big and bad about it because you just don't know where that person is willing to go, bro. You know?
Jog. They all fight.
Yes.
Like, I don't know nearly as much about white folks, right? Mm-hmm. But like your black friend from New Orleans, I don't think you look at any of them and say, she ain't about to do nothing.
Oh.
Not a, no matter what their disposition is, no matter what they get down is, they all fight. Like, I don't know about like the Odell Beckham types that go to like the white people private schools, right? But you and I were having this discussion because we were watching that video from back in the day of Leonard Fournette in the parking lot fighting with an offensive lineman.
Right? Yes.
Okay. So Leonard Fournette is like 225 and he is scrapping it out with his 300-pound offensive lineman. And I think it's fair to say that Leonard Fournette came out of it as the victor.
At the very minimum, he held his own very well.
He held that big dude at bay, yes. If nothing else, right? Right? But the thing in watching it was very clear that Leonard Fournette knew how to fight.
Yes.
And I need you to think about this for a second. There is no circumstance in this world where Leonard Fournette should know how to fight because no one should ever want to fight Leonard Fournette. like it is clear that Leonard Fournette has been that big since he was like 13 years old, like some reasonable form of anybody who was as big as Leonard Fournette was too old to be fighting Leonard Fournette.
Absolutely.
Yet it is very clear that Leonard Fournette has had lots of practice fighting. You know why? Because there are lots of dudes in New Orleans who said to themselves, I'm going to fight Leonard Fournette. If you got any like noteworthy percentage of your population that's willing to fight Leonard Fournette, y'all all fight.
Oh yeah, it's out of control. I mean, again, we've seen pictures of him from high school. He's like the same size basically he is today, like 225, yes. Whatever. And I'm just like, yo, Remember the fight that he had? Was that again when the Jags played the Bills?
Oh, yeah. Who did he fight? We ran all the way into it.
It was like Shaq Thompson or somebody like that. He just ran down there and squared up. And I was like, oh, man. Lennon's always ready to go, bro.
Dog, do you remember when, I forget what game it was at LSU, where he wasn't even supposed to play because he had a high ankle sprain or something? They got into it before the game. Leonard Fournette jumps into the fight and then says, I'm playing. Like, it wasn't a game time decision.
Right.
He was ruled out. By the way, the year before, he's supposed to go to the draft.
Right. See, that's my kind of running back. I love that. And I love the New Orleans in him about, I mean, look, again, another dude who you know is down to fight no matter what. Tyrann Mathieu, bro. Again, just think about the dudes you know from New Orleans and the demeanor they have and the disposition. And I'm not saying this to say that they're angry people or anything, because I think New Orleans dudes are some of the nicest, coolest dudes you'll ever meet anyway. But just don't get them mad.
Yeah, like, I think Tyrann Mathieu is, like, willing to fight, but not necessarily looking for it.
Right.
But he is at the size where someone will try to fight him, completely misunderstanding what's on the back end. Let me tell you who else got a lot of that New Orleans, like, down to fight when it comes to it in them. NBA, Kelly Oubre.
Oh, yeah.
If you've seen any of those moments where Kelly Oubre loses it, it is very clear. That dude is originally from New Orleans, because he's a Houston, New Orleans. Houston, but
yeah, right. Uh-huh.
But his name is Kelly Oubre. He is from New Orleans.
Yeah, right.
Like, there ain't no way around that. Kelly Oubre is ready to bang.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, man, I wouldn't try DJ. Is it Augustine?
Augustine.
I wouldn't try him either. You know what I'm saying? I was like,
yeah, I wonder who's learned the hard way about DJ Augustine.
Maybe not run up on somebody, but had to defend himself. He don't look like he can, you know, he's 6 foot, not a big dude.
Yeah.
I would not do it, bro. Apologize.
He's another move to Houston after Katrina situation. And what school was it? Was it Jones, where they had the big fight after the Wodies came to town?
Oh, was it Sharpstown? I think it was Sharpstown.
Yeah, but there's a fight where like, because there was a good 2-3 year stretch there where everything that went wrong in Houston, they was blaming it all on the Wodies.
Oh,
everything,
man.
Everything that possibly happened. It's 45 degrees a day. The Wodies made that happen. Like, the Wodies were responsible for everything that was wrong in Houston. But I do imagine, because no matter what in high school, man, you show up new, you're going to wind up out here. Somebody going to try to make you prove yourself at a new school. That's what it's going to be. I wonder how many people, like, really misjudged who it was. Because the ones that's really trying you are the weak, right? Like, the weak are trying to make a name for themselves. And so they're trying to find somebody weaker to then go try. And I just want to know who all of a sudden heard back, hey, bro, if you want to do this, man, we can.
Yeah, baby, what you want to do then? You know?
Yeah, but look, we can just go ahead and step outside. We ain't really got to do this in front of the women and children.
Man, look. I wrote a story about a dude, Jabbar Gibson, stole a bus in New Orleans during Katrina and rescued a bunch of people from his project, the Fisher Projects, and drove them all the way.
Oh, I've been by the Fisher.
Yeah, Fisher Rough, bro. Fisher Rough. Yeah. Yeah. And so he out of that. You know what I'm saying? He's out of that. Very, not a big guy at all. I mean, Jabbar, maybe 5'9", you know, 160. You know what I'm saying? Look, bro, I'm telling you, I would not do it. Jabbar is a great dude. I love the kid. Really thoughtful, really nice. Looks out for people. I would not do it, bro. Do not underestimate that man just because he ain't big. What they say, it's the size of the fight in the dog, not the size of the...
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And for the uninitiated, right? Because projects don't really exist like they used to anymore, like anywhere. Like, it's just a different... The game's been changed overall. The New Orleans projects were the realest in America. Right? Like, I know what you think in Chicago, wherever your place is or whatever it is. Nah, New Orleans, like, the way somebody put it to me about the projects in New Orleans versus Chicago. Mm-hmm. If you in the projects in Chicago and somebody asks what you doing there and you got a name, you probably all right.
Yeah.
That name is not necessarily going to do it. It's just like, is it your day-to-day or not? Like, these are the... But as much as we talk about how these cats be scrapping out and everything else... Other thing about New Orleans generally, and the projects specifically, man, you mess around and go up in somebody's spot in the projects in New Orleans and they sitting around like listening to classical music. Like somebody, like a dude in New Orleans will smoke you. And then a couple hours later, after cleaning up, be reading poetry in some little bar or some little club or something. They are all over the place, man. Like, there is no lane that you can put somebody in New Orleans from.
Oh yeah. And I always kind of thought, like, when people were sort of trying to figure out why people in Houston and New Orleans didn't kind of mix, it's like Houston is much more of a conformist type town. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Like, you know, like, yes, we all kind of trying, yes, to be on the same thing a little bit. You know what I'm,
yes,
saying?
And we make other people get on the thing. As much as we talk about Texas being an individualistic state, it's really, but it also comes with like a forced conformity, right, in a lot of ways.
Right, right, right. Like, oh, you like, okay, now we all on that. Now we all on the polo. You know what I'm saying? Now we went for, right, whatever, whatever. New Orleans is just not like that. Again, you don't want to read too much into where people are born, but, you know, people are creative and people are like individuals in a way in New Orleans. You're like, you just, like you said, there's no one way of knowing what one person will be interested in, what they're into when they're in New Orleans. People follow, you know, all sorts of different things. And so when they got down to Houston, bro, you could totally understand how, you know, these groups.
What is this?
What's this? What y'all work? What's that? You know what I'm saying? What you wearing, bro? Who the nose?
I had to explain to my boss once when Katrina hit. And they was in the Astrodome, and people were busting out the Astrodome, stealing cars to go back to New Orleans. And my boss is like, what is wrong with these people? I'm like, dude, they might as well be in Mars. Like, you have to understand, they can't tell you nothing about Jefferson Parish.
Yeah.
And they can't tell you nothing about St. Bernard Parish. They can't tell you nothing about Slidell. Mm-hmm. And now you have dropped them off in Houston?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, well, you know, I think prior to Katrina, right, I want to say that New Orleans had the highest percentage of residents that were natives or something,
yes,
like that. Yeah.
It's a Louisiana thing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. And so it totally makes sense that, like, why the hell would, I mean, you know, I mean, you know, I think New Orleanians get a little out of pocket talking about how much better their food is than everybody else. But, you know.
Well, it is. It is. They're right.
I mean, what food are we talking about, though? Like, what do they do so much? Like, they don't do Tex-Mex. You know what I'm saying? They don't do barbecue. They don't do barbecue.
Yeah, no. But what they do specifically is better than what anybody else does specifically in America.
I'll give you that. I kind of, you know, man, I was in Louisiana for a few years, and they talked down on Texas and our food.
Yeah, but you was in Shreveport. Like, that ain't really, that don't
count. But them people in Shreveport think that they in New Orleans, by the way. I was like, hey, man, y'all not South Louisiana, so chill out. But, you know, everybody, you know, they got Mardi Gras parades and everything in Shreveport, too. So they want to trade on South Louisiana's cool up there in Shreveport. Yeah. But, you know.
So how is the racism in Shreveport?
So when I was there, they elected their first black mayor. This is 2006. But it was one of those places that, like, there was no discussion about taking down the Confederate monument that was out front of the courthouse. The black people in Shreveport would always let you know this was one of the last capitals of the Confederate. You know what I'm saying? Like, they want you to know that because that's how they get down there, man. I mean, that was also the first place I ever got called in my face.
Oh, wow.
I was 27 years old. I'm a black person that grew up in the South, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I've been through a lot of situations. My first weekend in Shreveport at IHOP, a white guy comes in there talking about, I'll fight any in here. I'll fight. And he's looking at me and I'm like, me and these other black, you know, these like young black kids that sit around me. And we just like, who is he talking to? Is he talking to us? And finally, one of them kids said, hey, man, I'll kick you in your neck. And finally, somebody came in and got that white guy out of there. But, you know, it was just like, yeah, that's kind of, I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is what it's a little different here, bro. You know what I'm saying? Shreveport a little different. I know your folks are from that part of the country.
No, they're not from up there.
Wait, no, wait, ain't your daddy from up around Shreveport, man? Where's Oakdale?
Oakdale. So you know how Louisiana go in that L?
Yeah.
Oakdale is like on the inner vertex of the L.
Okay.
So it's more of a central type. Alexandria is the nearest. Like, you go to Alexandria to go to the mall.
Ooh, okay.
Where Odell is. So yeah, no, it ain't no. My daddy has a not so great Yelp review of Shreveport. Let me tell you, it's short and sweet. It's not what's up.
I heard what your pop said about. I mean, look, man, I have a huge affinity for that place. Like, I enjoyed it. I know that makes me unique amongst a lot of people. I really like Shreveport. Like, you know, the people there are like, you know, generous and great and industrious, and they're really doing their best in like trying circumstances. Like, Shreveport is a declining city, but I mean, their racism is like, for somebody that grew up in Houston and then had lived in big cities, like, it was very like, this is what it's like. This is what I got to deal with here. So
Man, we've been all over the place here. I'm trying to think if there's any ground to cover. We ain't even get back around to Deshaun Watson. Podcast ain't supposed to go this long. It's early where you at. No, you good. It's early where you at. I feel like you just get warmed up. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to go work out after this, bro. I'm gonna do the Bomani yoga, you know, workout plan as soon as this is over.
Yeah, I got my workout in. I've worked out 5 days a week, not missing one, for, I want to say, 4 months now.
Man, look at you, bro. Like I'm saying, you're a musclehead now. You used to talk about the rest of us in the workout community, and now look at you.
Now, I'm an inmate, and I don't talk about the exercise community. I'm specific. It's you CrossFit maniacs that I talk about out here hurting yourselves.
Oh, I mean, look, man, I know how to protect myself. I'm not doing none of that, those complex explosive lifts. I ain't doing none of that. I got one barbell and 15-pound plates, and I make it work right there.
Hey, man. Well, that is Joel Anderson. Check him out at Slate. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.